It's September 20th, 2015. Reel in the Field of Goals. Reel in the Field of Goals is brought to you by the Ballard Agency. this is the Instant Reaction Podcast for Reel in the Field of Goals, coming to you right after every Seahawks game. Win or lose, and most only so far lose. So,
pretty much only lose.
Only loses so far, there's that. Do got to get it out there that, yes, Reel in the Field Goals is brought to you by the Ballard Agency. For your insurance need, the Ballard Agency is located in Kirkland, Washington. Call them at 425-454-3510. Not in the mood to do the jingle. And tell them that Field Goals sent you. Kenneth Arthur and Danny Kelly talking to you about what just happened and what just happened to the Seahawks. Lost 27-17 to the Packers in Green Bay. Danny, this is an instant reaction. Tell me a good thing that you saw tonight.
Well, I actually liked how Russell Wilson played, in spurts at least. It's like funny because everyone that I'm talking to on Twitter is kind of freaking out, and I understand why. The Seahawks are 0-2. That's definitely not a good way to start the season. And Seahawks fans, I don't think, are really used to the Seahawks playing. I guess they're not used to the Seahawks losing. I feel like we're used to the Seahawks playing pretty sloppy and getting wins. And then the last couple of games, they've played sloppy, gotten fourth quarter leads, and then ended up losing. But I thought Russell Wilson played well. I really liked how he played. Like, specifically, he was making some really nice throws from the pocket. He finally started to, keep a few read option plays, which definitely helped in terms of the run game, kind of keeping the Packers honest. And, so that was a positive. I think, anytime you can take a lead into the fourth quarter against probably the other, like, the best team in the NFC right now, that's a good thing. I think people expect perfection, and when it doesn't happen, it's definitely really frustrating, but there definitely were some good things that came from the game. There's a lot of bad things I could rattle off as well, but since you were asking,
we can talk about the bad. I think what people do tend to forget, these were the arguably the two hardest games on the schedule, and they pop off 1-2. And a bad team doesn't go on the road and lead in the fourth quarter in both games. So, there's a big difference. I think people have raised their expectations, rightfully so, to the point where they do not think that the Seahawks should ever lose. But, to think about that, they go to St. Louis, they're leading in the fourth quarter, a player falls down. They go to Green Bay, they're leading in the fourth quarter. There's some really close calls and, maybe some questionable ones, but we don't have to get into so much the refs, because they did call some tough stuff on the Green Bay Packers as well, yeah. All said and done. But I think that there were stuff like, how does a guy fumble the ball and it goes into a pile and it doesn't matter who comes out of the pile? How does that not matter? There was nothing that obviously... I don't get that.
I don't have a good answer for you on that one.
Hopefully the NFL will address it. I don't know. The refs didn't, so I don't know necessarily what's happening there, but, I wouldn't boil it all down to one play, but I would say that, Green Bay, it's a hard place to play for anyone, and they did come away 17-16 in the fourth quarter, it looked like, or 17-13, I should say, and then it was 17-16, and it looked like maybe they could go down and, how far away are the Seahawks from winning this game? Maybe they're 1 foot away, which is, about how far that Russell Wilson pass was in front of Doug Baldwin. That if he had caught that, if he had been a little bit faster, if the ball had been thrown a little bit less, that the Seahawks would have gone up by 8 points.
Yeah. I don't know. To me, like, these first two losses of the season, both the thing that comes to mind for me is this is football. Like, this is what happens in football. Yeah, it's like Russell Wilson throws a pick there on that last drive before the Packers put it away. It's one of those things where the guy caught it with one hand, he fucking fumbled it, and then the Seahawks, of course, picked it up, but then they gave it to the Packers. Like, this is just football. Like, weird stuff happens. I think that guy made a great play. I think Russell Wilson probably should have lofted the ball, not thrown it quick, with that trajectory. But,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's like a good football play. The guy made it. The Seahawks then their comeback attempt was thwarted. It's I don't know. To me, it's just like that's football. The Seahawks have kind of come on the they've ended up on the wrong end of the last two games. I think that that Seahawks fans are very used to winning. You know what I mean? Like the Seahawks have won a lot of ugly games over the last couple of years. And so when you lose an ugly game, it's like a totally different feeling. And I think that people need to keep that in mind. But at the same time, you know, the defensive issues are concerning for the longer term. I think the tackling has been really bad, which is really strange to for the Seahawks, because, you know, that's part of what they've really been known for. And, you know, just on like, on an emotional level, it feels like they're flat to me. Like the first two games, they felt kind of flat. You know, maybe that's the Cam Chancellor thing creeping in. That's a distraction. Maybe that they need that leadership. Maybe it's part of the vacuum of having several of their coaches leave, like several of their main coaches leave during the off season in Dan Quinn and Ken Norton. You know, maybe it's a whole shitload of things all at once, which is probably probably what it is. Honestly, it's just a number of factors, and the ball hasn't really bounced their way a few times. It's just stuff like that. So, you know, to me, like one of the main concerns so far is they felt a little bit flat. And I think Marshawn Lynch has felt really flat, which is a big change, because he's kind of like their emotional, fiery, like people rally around him on offense, and he hasn't really had any plays, or maybe just like one or two of these first two games that you're like, you know, that's the Marshawn, you know, that we know and love. So I don't know. It's just an interesting affect from the team, I guess. And hopefully they'll kind of figure that out and get it changed. Obviously we saw that last year as well. So,
going over some of the numbers, Russell Wilson was 19 of 30 for 206 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 1 interception. The Seahawks held Aaron Rodgers somewhat decent, 22 of 33 for 249 yards, 2 touchdowns, but 7.5-yard average. But obviously in the fourth quarter, that was blown out. And they were unable to stop him in the fourth quarter. Russell Wilson did rush 10 times for 78 yards. Marshawn Lynch, 15 carries for just 41 yards, 2.7. And this is a Green Bay defense that was not looking good at all against Matt Forte the week before. And then some other numbers that may be concerning. While Doug Baldwin had a big game, 7 catches for 92 yards and a touchdown, Jimmy Graham targeted just twice, 1 catch for 11 yards. Jermaine Kearse targeted twice, no catches. Any thoughts there on Jimmy Graham and how there was a lot of talk on Twitter about whether or not, why aren't they getting involved in the offense, or was that just a matter of the fact that there weren't a lot of opportunities for Graham?
No, I think, you know, as people are asking me on Twitter, like, what are your thoughts on the Seahawks only having Jimmy Graham have one catch? They need to pass it to him more. That's my thought. You know, like, I don't give a shit about game flow or any of these, like, BS excuses. Like, you need to pass it to him more often. That's my analysis.
Right.
Like, this is just easy. Pass it to him more often.
Yeah, I mean, he got up there.
That's how I feel about it.
He wasn't cheap to get. He's costing a lot of money. You obviously came in with the idea that this is going to be the focal point of your passing game. Now you have a guy like Jimmy Graham, and mm-hmm. There were times I was very, you know, Russell Wilson did some cool things, but at the same time, I was very frustrated for much of the night. He would sort of drop back into the pocket, wait 1 second, and then say, well, now I got to run it. And then he would try to run up the middle between 3 defenders. And it's, like, really awkward that he does that. And also, you know, when he would roll out, and it would be like, you know, when the Packers had the ball and the Seahawks couldn't get to Aaron Rodgers, and he would roll out, or he'd have, like, 6 seconds in the pocket, Chris Collinsworth would always say, and nobody can cover anyone for 6 seconds. And then all of a sudden when it happened with Seattle and Russell Wilson was rolling around and he had 8 seconds, it would be like, how can there not be anybody open? And I hardly believe it. And I don't know. Do you think that Wilson has a hard time going through progressions? Do you think he can't see players down the field, or is Green Bay just amazing at covering receivers?
No, I mean, I think, well, first of all, Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback probably in the league.
Maybe, better than Joe Flacco.
Maybe of all time. So, yeah. I mean, you're kind of comparing the two. It's like,
what I'm talking about, I'm not even talking about Rodgers or Wilson. I'm just talking about the receivers. and whether or not they were uncovered. You know,
No, I don't know. I'd have to look at that with the all 22 and everything before I'd say anything, because you can't really tell, obviously. I think the Seahawks missed a few, opportunities to throw the ball downfield, but overall, there was probably three or four drives where they moved the ball through the air pretty well. Obviously Russell Wilson's numbers weren't super great, but, that felt to me like something to be encouraged about, was the way that he played. Yeah, he took some sacks. Yeah, he has this weird tendency to, instead of climbing the pocket and trying to throw, he climbs the pocket and tries to run, and then they just collapse on him and tackle him. It's kind of like that's a game plan for stopping Wilson. It's to run, make him run up the middle.
But how does he find as many targets for Chris Matthews as he does for Jimmy Graham? How does he find, I don't necessarily believe that Doug Baldwin should be more open than Jimmy Graham. One of them is 6'7", 6'8", freaking, that's how tall. How can you not see Jimmy Graham? That's the awkward thing to me, where I do want to know why Graham isn't more involved. And I do think, that is a point of fact, is that he's supposed to be one of the most unique players in the league. So it is somewhat frustrating, especially when you were that close to building a lead that may have at least forced Green Bay, something, that when you were in the fourth quarter and you had the lead. And, and it seems like the Seahawks are really streaky within each game, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, and we've talked about that a little bit. I think they're kind of like a rhythm offense, Russell Wilson in particular. And there are times where he can get into a real lull and look pretty garbage, and then he'll play like really balls out in other series. But it's like, again, this happens to every freaking team in the NFL every game. Like, you can't look great on every drive. Like, there were a good amount of drives where Aaron Rodgers looked human. You know what I mean? It's perspective. You have to keep that in mind. That said, obviously they can do better. And I think that's why I felt encouraged about Russell Wilson. I think, the good things that he did to me outweighed the bad. And then I was more concerned about the run game and the defense, particularly the tackling and kind of just finishing plays and finishing the game than I was about Russell.
Do you think that Marshawn Lynch looks a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for, that where a person doesn't care about something?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, like, I don't like to get into this stuff because I think it's really rumored, gossipy, like, hot takey. But in this case, it actually kind of looks to me like Marshawn is, like, checked out. I mean? Just like a weird, he has a weird affect, and I think that, maybe I'm just imagining that, or maybe I'm making too big a deal about it, but whatever. But it's concerning to me. That's more concerning than, the play by Wilson or whatever.
I think that this game, it wasn't, like you said, I don't think that being 0-2 is that shocking. And I think that when you look at the rest of their schedule, I would be really, at this point, I'm not upset. I know a lot of fans are, but I just have I have a hard time believing they won't be 2-2 this upcoming week at home against the Chicago Bears. Jay Cutler may be out. He was hurt today. Jimmy Clausen is awful. He is abysmal. And so if they lose that game, I would definitely be like, okay, well, they're going to have to do something to maybe restart or to find out what's wrong, because the season probably is not going to go so well. And then week 4, Detroit Lions on Monday Night Football. Monday nights in Seattle have been going pretty well now for a few years, and the Detroit Lions also are 0-2, so there's that. I feel like this would be a good opportunity, because a lot of fans are down, to maybe start a new segment called Relatively Speaking. So the Seahawks are 0-2 after losses in Green Bay, arguably the best team in the NFC. Everyone was saying they were 1-2. They had a lead in the fourth quarter. They lost to the Rams. They had a lead in the fourth quarter, and it was very close to them not losing that game. But relatively speaking, how would you feel if your starting quarterback was Brandon Whedon? Dallas Cowboys, they did win today against the Philadelphia Eagles, but Tony Romo's out for approximately 8 weeks with a broken collarbone. Dez Bryant may be out just as long. So the Cowboys, and that's a team that they play in week 8. So Yeah. Relatively speaking, do you feel better about your the Seahawks' chances than Dallas's?
Yeah, I do. You know, I would have felt better about the Seahawks' chances even if Dallas hadn't lost Dez and Romo, honestly. Right. I think the Seahawks are a very talented team. I think they've dropped two really tough games, and there's some things that they're doing that are concerning. But, I mean, again, it's like you have to keep some perspective on the length of the season and the ups and downs that happen in every season. Like, the Seahawks traditionally are very slow starters. They're second half teams, both in the season and in games. They're missing one of their key guys. They've lost their defensive coordinator and their linebackers coach, who was very fiery and emotional. I mean, there's a lot of things that they kind of have to get over. Plus, we haven't even talked about, the emotional factor of losing the Super Bowl. It's like, there's definitely some things going on that are concerning, but nothing to me is like a death knell. Like, they're done. Like, I don't have that feeling. You know, they've just played probably the best team in the NFC. If that's not the Seahawks, obviously their record would not indicate that right now, but they just played the best team in the NFC.
Right.
Into the fourth quarter. So, it's perspective. It is relatively speaking. Like, obviously you'd rather get the win, right. But
I think coming into the year, a lot of people, I think myself and Danny included, thought that the Eagles were going to be. And relatively speaking, the Eagles are 0-2. They just lost to Brandon Whedon, and DeMarco Murray has 11 yards through two games. Byron Maxwell is sort of looking not so good.
Sort of.
And so the Eagles, do they have bigger problems? Relatively speaking, the Baltimore Ravens came in as playoff favorites. They are 0-2. They just lost to the Oakland Raiders. How would you
NFL
feel worse?
Is weird, man. The NFL is weird.
Would you feel worse losing to the Green Bay Packers in the fourth quarter in Lambeau against Aaron Rodgers at home, or losing to Derek Carr in Oakland?
Yeah. It's like, I understand people probably say we're rationalizing everything, and that's fine, and I understand that. But at the same time, I think people are a lot of people I feel like are unrealistic about the NFL in general, like how difficult it is to win. And so people tend to ride like these really, really high emotional highs and then really, really low, low, low emotional, like,
Just look around. Just look around at today. The Dolphins lost to the Jaguars. The Rams lost to the Redskins.
This is the weirdest week I can ever remember.
Yeah, it was a very weird week, The Giants lost to the Falcons at home. The Titans lost to the Browns. There were, a number of really weird games. And I would say that Seattle, especially when you look at how many teams have started the season 1-1, that Seattle really isn't that far back. The Cardinals, look very good so far. But I think we're just I think that Carson Palmer is a ticking time bomb. So I'm withholding judgment until at least week 6.
Yeah. I mean, it's so hard to, the NFL is like, 24/7 coverage, and there's a week in between games. So, it's obviously like everything gets hyper analyzed, and that I understand that, but people tend to lose track of the big picture, I think, during the season and during games. I was kind of like being a smart ass about that on Twitter, and people just see one thing. Like, for instance, I thought Bobby Wagner didn't play very well again. He just has looked kind of ordinary to me. But you know what? That doesn't mean that that the Seahawks are screwed this year. Like, you don't have to make that jump. You know what I mean? Like, the Seahawks have had a couple of bad games over the years and bounced back and played really well. You know what? They've been probably the most consistent team maybe in history over the last 3 years, right? Like, we've talked about this. Like, teams get blown out 1 week, and then they look awesome the next week, then they, whatever. And it goes week, 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 week. The Seahawks have been competitive in every game for the last, 1,000 days, So, people, I understand, riding that wave of emotion, but at the same time, the Seahawks have been incredibly consistent relative.
Yeah, this will be a double-digit loss, but again, they were leading in the fourth quarter on the road to Aaron Rodgers. I thought that was interesting, because I thought that Bobby Wagner had some really good plays, and so I said so on Twitter, and someone said, "What are you talking about?" So
no, I mean, I think he did have a couple of good plays, but there was a few plays that jumped out to me where he kind of didn't, like, he would, like, he just, I don't know. It goes back to the kind of weird, like probably irrational feeling I have that the team is a little bit flat.
Well, Deion Bailey was replaced by Deshaun Shedd today and the starter. Any thoughts on his play?
He looked pretty good, I think, actually. I don't remember him from a ton of plays. He had a couple of good, strong tackles. I thought that was pretty interesting that Marcus Burley seemed to have a really good game. That was encouraging. Because I didn't really think that, you know, he had really shown much in any of his previous games here. So that was really encouraging. I think if he could be a consistent nickel type guy, that'd be huge for the Seahawks because they're going to be playing a lot of nickel this year. I think the Seahawks played 100% nickel this game.
There were no blitzes, what they said, right?
And there was, yeah, I don't think they blitzed much either. And that was like, you know, Aaron Rodgers gets the ball out. Like, you know, there was a few times where he held the ball for a long time, but like the vast majority of his plays,
it's ridiculous. It's indefensible.
In like literally a half a second.
It's indefensible. You can't do anything to stop it. But I still even like, it was just bananas to me how some of the times where it would just be like, right when they're about to sack Aaron Rodgers, he gets rid of the ball. It goes right to someone who's open, and it's like, how did you know that that player would be open at that second, at the very moment, right before someone was going to take you down? It was just so frustrating. He's such a frustrating player if you're not a Green Bay fan.
Yeah. And, I mean, the two, you know, the touchdown and then the two-point conversion plays were like a microcosm for Aaron Rodgers. Dude, he hit – both of those passes were under pressure where he kind of, like, scrambled out. And both were like, you couldn't have placed them any better. It was like amazingly perfect. And it's like, you know, it's hard to beat Aaron Rodgers when you make a turnover in the fourth quarter and he's playing perfect ball in the fourth quarter. You know what I mean? Like, that's football.
Right.
That's why I'm not freaking out. I mean, obviously, I think people who are really freaking out right now might listen to us and say we're rationalizing. But to me, it's more like just being realistic. Like, you know, if you expect perfection or anything near it in the NFL, like you're bound to be disappointed way more often than not.
What about Richard Sherman? He had a costly pass interference. He was also beaten on a certain touchdown to open the game.
Well, that's debatable. I actually kind of think that was Earl Thomas's fault. I'd have to look at it, but
I will feel. Do you want me to feel better if it was Earl Thomas's fault? I don't think that it really. You had two.
The other thing is, he didn't. I don't think he had a very good game either. He missed a couple tackles that were big. Legendary. Yeah. Plays. To me, I mean, it's probably a combination of Sherman and Earl on that touchdown, but I think Earl's got, he can't let him get in behind him like that. I kind of think that's like his role there, but.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the Seahawks and Packers, they both had 21 first downs. The Packers had 3 first downs by penalty.
Man, the Bennett offsides things, man, those were brutal.
Yeah. Do you think that, I think that in a certain aspect, it's, you want him to not do that, but in another point, is he more effective because he jumps sometimes and he's able to get that perfect timing? Do you think he could be Michael Bennett without a couple offsides penalties?
I mean, yeah, like that's kind of you take the good with the bad. He's obviously part of his game is getting really good jumps on the snap and everything, but.
It didn't feel like it, but the Seahawks had more yards per play than the Packers, 5.7 to 5.6.
Yeah.
Pretty even in yards.
Russell, like, I don't know what his yards per attempt was, but it was pretty good, too.
Yeah, he had 7.8 yards per carry, 10 carries for 78 yards. He did make some nice plays.
What was his yards per attempt on the passing? That's what I was wondering.
6.9.
I mean, what's that?
6.9.
So, I mean, I guess that's not really that great. And it was like a lot of his production, I think, came in like in bunches, you know what I mean? And then the rest of the game was kind of a lull. And that's kind of typical for the Seahawks. They tend to do that.
There was also a phenomenal catch by Luke Wilson that I don't even know how he pulled off. Again, it was not
really good.
It was a thing, though. You know, that pass was nowhere near Wilson. He managed to make the catch. The pass to Jimmy Graham, where the pressure was coming in the end, then it was in the red zone, and Russell Wilson throws a dart at Jimmy Graham, who's not looking, and it was nearly intercepted. It wouldn't have counted if they did intercept it, but still, there's some head-scratching passes still from Wilson in this game. I'm not 100% sold on him through two games. I don't know. I know you said
no. I'm not sold on him either. I just felt it was encouraging because the first game he didn't. To me, he didn't really look that great in the first game, and so
I expect him to come out next week at home against the Bears and just have a great game. That would feel really nice if he was able to just come out against Chicago and just have a great game. Carson Palmer had four touchdowns against the Bears today. They look bad. So that would be my true litmus test, is if the Seahawks look bad against the Bears next week, that would be much more concerning as compared to, you know, these two games where they were up against it. I mean, in the week one, their shitty offensive line against the Rams, great defensive line, and then week two, just anyone against Aaron Rodgers, it's at home. It's going to be a tough matchup. And they could have gotten, it could have been a lot worse. You know, 7.5 yards per attempt. Aaron Rodgers looked a little bit, you know, frustrated. Then the other thing about the Packers, they win the game, but they lose Eddie Lacy. They lose Devontae Adams. They didn't come out of this game very, very happy either, I don't think.
Yeah, and they also lost Josh Boyd, I think his name is, one of their defensive tackles or defensive ends.
Yeah, and he looks like he's he was looking crying. So I'm assuming that injury.
That looked bad.
Yeah, maybe not coming back very soon. It'll be interesting. Again, like the Seahawks beat the Packers last year, 36-16. They really dominated them, and the Packers came back to make it within an onside kick of the Super Bowl. So
yeah,
you know, relax, I guess is what they say.
I just think keep it in perspective, you just said there, the Seahawks beat the Packers 36-16 at home last year. Like,
yeah,
does that mean the end for the Packers? No, you know, it's like, this is one game. Like, it really doesn't matter what order they get in. They still have to try and win 11 games or whatever, 12 games.
The order doesn't matter. I mean, it'll just come into the matter of, you know, what are their biggest games?
What's that?
Their biggest game, they got to beat the Cardinals. You know, that's to me, like, you know, you got to, at this point, your only goal really is to win the division or at least be there, you know, up there. So at this point, I think they'll be 2-2. Then they have to go to Cincinnati, and then that'll be another test. You know, the Bengals are 2-0, and they get the Panthers at home, who they have beaten at home for the last 4 years. So it's definitely not encouraging. I suspect that, you know, a lot of people said, well, what if they start 0-2 and then they'll cave into Cam? If anything, I think this makes them resent Cam more. I think they might be pushing.
I mean, if they haven't done it yet, I don't know why they would do it now.
There's no way. I mean, another example, the Dallas Cowboys in 1993. They won the Super Bowl. Emmitt Smith wanted more money. They weren't going to give it to him. He held out. They lost. They lost their first two games. They went 0-2. Then Jerry Jones caved into Emmitt Smith, paid him. They came back. They lost two games the rest of the year, and they won the Super Bowl. So, you know, that was another example of a similar thing going on where a player is holding out. But I don't think that Cam Chancellor quite holds the same value as, you know, the NFL's all-time leading rusher. So it's just a matter of, you know, we'll see what happens, but it seems to me that the further away he gets, the more harder it will be to imagine the relationship repairing itself.
Yeah, it's just really weird. I mean, it's like there's a reason no one else in this, like, CBA's held out other than Carson Palmer, who, I mean, that was with the Bengals, who are, like, you know, the closest thing to an evil organization in the NFL.
Right.
You know, just because of their ownership and everything. But, I don't know. It's baffling. I obviously, everyone's sick of it, but I don't think they're going to bend to it at this point.
Yeah. And again, you know, the Seahawks fans, every loss is tough. But again, this loss, they were up in the fourth quarter. You look at the 49ers, they go to this Pittsburgh and they get their asses kicked. The Seahawks still haven't had their asses kicked.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like, it's the same thing as what I've been saying this whole time, is, like, I think people lack – okay, now, that's being very generalized. People who are freaking out right now, like, legitimately – like, obviously, I totally understand people who are worried and or have concerns and are you know, like clear about their concerns, but like people who start having like just meltdowns at this point are like, you know, you need to get some perspective. Like, look around the rest of the NFL. You need to watch the rest of the league to see how crazy it is from week to week. I just think, you know, people expect perfection and it's just really unrealistic.
Yeah, and I think it's realistic to believe that in a couple weeks. Again, last year the Seahawks were 3-3.
Yep.
They might be 3-3 again this year. The way the schedule plays out, it's very reasonable. They were 6-4 after the loss to the Chiefs, and people were like, "What are we doing? Why are we even trying? Why get rid of everyone?" You know, after
long season, just keep that in mind.
There's a lot of time to go, and the Seahawks typically get on a roll at some point, and I don't have any reason to think that they won't again this year, especially their two toughest games maybe right there in the beginning. Anything that we didn't cover that you want to put in your final thoughts? This segment is called Kelly's Final Thoughts.
No, I mean, but we kind of covered it as far as I know. Like, I need to watch it again to get a better idea of, like, what happened. I mean, there's just a lot of things that they need to clean up. That's, like, the biggest thing. And a lot of it is, like, little stuff, you know, tackling in particular and, you know, penalties are still a huge issue. Obviously, I don't know if that's going to ever change, though, with this team. But, yeah, I think the time to freak out really isn't now for me. It's, you know, if they lose at home next week, then you can start getting that feeling. And then, obviously, from there, you can start panicking if they lose a fourth game early on this year. But right now, to me, they're still a really strong team. Played two really tough teams, ended up on the wrong side of it in both of them. But that's football, and, you know, just keep moving forward. It's a really long season.
They haven't had that. For anything, I would say they haven't had that domination factor yet, the types of things that you didn't used to see. You know, why is a guy like James Stark have 20 carries for 95 yards? It seems like that's something that they would shut down in 2013. Why did Randall Cobb have 8 catches for 116 yards? Again, that wasn't something – they weren't really giving up 100-yard games in the past. Then they had the whole thing with Richard Sherman moving to the slot to cover Randall Cobb or whatever that could have been. But Randall Cobb, they had no plan. They had no – and they had a plan, but they did not – whatever plan they had to execute, Cobb was able to – eat as much as you wanted out there on the field. So there are concerns, but again, probably the toughest place to play in the NFL right now, and the Seahawks are coming home in week 3 to play Jimmy Clausen. So,
well, maybe.
Well, give me that much. I'm going to believe that it's Jimmy Clausen.
Yeah, we don't need to worry about that yet.
I guess worst case scenario, it's Jay Cutler, so I can handle.
Yeah.
This is Real in the Field Goals, the Instant Reaction Show. If you're listening to this, please note that it is a new channel for the podcast on Real in the Field Goals. You have to resubscribe to Real in the Field Goals. It is no longer on the old one, so please do subscribe to Real in the Field Goals and give it a 5-star rating and say how good we are at this. And keep tuning in twice a week, once after the game and once every Thursday, where a guest will come on and talk to me and Danny about the upcoming game. And so far, we've done that twice, and both times we've lost. So we'll switch it up or something. I don't know. Next week, it's the Chicago Bears in the middle of the Sunday. So that's it for this week. This is brought to you by the Ballard Agency, BallardAgency.com, 425-454-3510. Next week, talk to you then. Bye.